Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for joining us for this week's FX Podcast. I'm Jeff Fuser. Today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to kind of recap the RED project, the RED software, the RED hardware, the RED camera. And Mike Seymour is on the line with me, who, of course, attended RED training, if you've been following the stories, last Friday, and is now back home with the camera. And we've had a shoot between now and then. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, man. How are you?
I'm good. It's weird not having you around.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for letting me stay at your place. And it was certainly a very educational period. I thought it was a good idea to have a chat now just to discuss some of the issues, especially some of the post-issues that we learned from, let's face it, we're now one of the more experienced crews in the world with shooting with the RED camera.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I figure there's... I've said this to a few people, you know, that have been talking about the footage we shot and talking to us about stuff. I'm like, you know what? Our goal here was to shoot some footage that we could use and get some basic tests out of. But there's a lot more experienced photographers, DPs than us who are going to be putting this camera through a lot of intensive image testing and all that kind of stuff. And certainly we're going to examine all this stuff. But our goal was to get data and a basic experience with the camera so that we can start exploring these issues and figure out how we're going to make it work and how we're going to use the camera in post-production more than anything else.
Well, actually, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because we did post some images relatively soon after getting the camera. We shot on the Saturday because the RED camera was given to us on the effectively on the Friday night. So we immediately went on set and shot some images with it. But already we've actually discovered that it isn't as simple as plug and play in terms of getting the best results. And I guess not dissimilar to a colorist, really, in a, though obviously simplified form, you can actually tweak the output of the RED's conversion to DPX, can't you, Jeff?
Yeah, the program right now that's shipping with the camera is called RED Alert, and that's the baby brother of the real software, which is RED Cine, right?
Yeah, RED Cine will be the main product I think most people will get for free with their camera, and then there are other products, of course, like Scratch and Final Cut.
Right, so my understanding is this kind of started out, RED Alert kind of started out as a internal tool to get images off the camera right away. And it's actually quite robust in terms of what it can do and how solid it's been in my playing with it. The scary part is there's a lot of adjustments. There's a lot of things to understand. It's kind of like if you said, okay, you went out and shot some film, and now, here, you put it on the film scanner and figure out how you want to scan it and, you know, all that. It's like now that's in your hands. And you're responsible for that. It's depending on, you know, I mean, obviously the workflow here is going to be different for every project. But, you know, now you have to do something with the stuff that you've shot. It's not just as simple as putting the tape in a machine and loading it and hitting play or getting some scans from somewhere and they are what you would expect them to be. You now have control over some of this data. And, you know, the images that we've got posted on FX Guide, I think we're going to end up replacing. We'll obviously flag them as new as we get more experience with this stuff and learn more and talk to the people down at RED about how to run this software and how what we want to tweak and how we want to, you know, make these pictures look. So, you know, this is even before we get to the point where we hopefully pass these images off to a colorist. Like you said, you've been working on that.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that we're effectively shooting for, as of course the marketing has told you, in a RAW format. So just in the same way that when I bring my RAW files into Photoshop, I have a UI controlling that, which you might use, for example, in the bridge, the Adobe product, the bridge. And exactly the same way RED Alert is, you know, think of RED Alert as being the, if that is Adobe's RAW preparer for Photoshop, so too RED Alert is the RAW preparer of the RED Cine files or the R3D files. And in just the same way that I can do quite a lot of tweaking in Photoshop in Bridge as I'm bringing in those RAW files from my digital stills camera, I can do a lot of tweaking to the RED files, even at this early stage, as I bring them in and convert them from the RED format to something we're more familiar with, like DPX or 16-bit TIFF.
Right. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time today kind of going through the process and bringing images into monitors that I knew and trusted and look at things and get other people involved to look at them and people, you know, with really good eyes. And, you know, we're learning a lot. It's a great process, and I'm happy to be this early in the process getting to look at it. But bottom line, at the end of all this is I'm very impressed with what I'm seeing, you know, and I don't know if you've got the chance yet down there to take a peek at the some of the blue screen stuff we've shot and stuff like that, and actually pull it into gears and stuff.
It was so funny when I first did it in Flame. It was just the lack of film grain. You know, in 4K stuff, yeah. It was like, boom. It's just so clean.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, that's the first thing I noticed was, wow. Yeah,
but even more than I expected, I think there's going to be, especially in the early days, a real need to, as fast as you can, work with people that have some experience in transferring these files. As you said, Jeff, it's just not going to be the case of, you know, plug and play the tape and you've got what you've got and you've got, that's it. And that's a new learning experience. I wasn't actually even anticipating. I wasn't really thinking about that role of the data wrangler as being one that has quite so much sort of flexibility and influence on final image quality as immediately apparent.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be a big part of the process. And also, you know, there's going to be a learning curve for people in terms of just, you know, even in the compressed format, the time, the amount of data that starts to accumulate, and then the amount of time it's going to take to process that data into formats that you can use in different areas. I mean, the first thing that's really cool is that make QuickTime function, which makes reference movies pointing to it in three different sizes. I mean, that's instantaneous. And now you can set a basic color, you can hit make QuickTimes, boom, you've got full size.
Now, I'm just going to back you up there, Jeff, because people may not be 100% clear what's going on there. So let's just walk them through that process you just described, because then
right.
If you're not,
yep,
we've been doing nothing else since Saturday but doing that. But what we're saying is you come in with the camera, you've got, say, an 8 gig file, you transfer that via a card reader to, say, a Mac, and then you run Red Alert. Red Alert only runs on OS X at the moment. And
Intel OS X.
Intel OS X, absolutely right.
Now, as John figured out, yes.
Now give us the step of what you're explaining and how it relates to the wavelet extraction.
So when you, first of all, you look at it and say, everything's okay, color's right, everything's the way you want it. There's a pull-down to generate a full-size QuickTime, a 1K or a half-K QuickTime, or make QuickTimes, which does all three at once. And literally, you hit make QuickTimes, and three QuickTime movies appear in the folder that the original source footage is in, and you can double-click them, and QuickTime Player will launch, and you can look at the footage.
Now, you do have to have installed the QuickTime plugin codec into the right place in your system folder. So on a Mac,
correct.
You go to, well, maybe you can go through, it's in the library, inside
library,
QuickTimes.
Right, there's a component you drop in there. There's a really nice README that comes from Red with all this stuff, and obviously people that have the camera would have this given to them by the Red people. So once you do that and you make those QuickTimes, my understanding of this is that it's just peeling that data out of the original file using the benefits of wavelet compression.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously if you wanted to pull out, say, standard res, let's say in my case PAL, your case NTSC, you could try and convert the 4K down, or you could just say, you know what, let me just view the data and think of like the wavelet technology is literally like a wave with little waves on the big waves, and tiny little waves on the tiny little waves. And so you say, look, I want the big wave stuff, which is all I'm really concerned about right now, which is going to give me a nice, say, 1K extraction. And then from there, I could 1K convert to 720 by 576 in my case. Now, mm-hmm. You might say, well, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do everything 4K, blah, blah, blah. And of course you could. You could take the 4K, convert that effectively to a 4K file, and then just as you would in Photoshop, down-res it to all the way from 4K, in my case 4,000 by 2,000 pixels, down to 720 by 576. Point is, that's not a particularly quick way of doing things. You're much better off getting the first leap by the wavelet technology and just say, give me the 1K extraction. Still benefits from the lens, still has gorgeous looking imagery, and then I just convert the last bit in the slightly slower format of going out to, say, tier 4 DPX.
Right. I mean, for me, it started out with, that, and then it moved to, now what I'd really like to do is things like, I'd like to make a web page or using a web browser, somehow a quick way, like I want to make a compressor setup that I drop all of the half-res movies on and it automatically spits out tiny little H.264s that I can quickly look through and distribute to people of every scene so that they can get a quick look or something like that. I mean, I haven't really gotten, I've just, actually before we hooked up for this call, I was actually doing some compressor experimenting and was having some success, but then you start playing with, okay, now how does it figure out pixel picture sizes, and I was starting to play with that, but I'm not there yet, but I'm making progress. It's all a big learning curve.
Yeah, this is exactly it. And I guess one of the reasons to even have the podcast today was we wanted to kind of flag to people that, you know, this is a whole new way of working for post-production. And it is really interesting, really exciting. It is different, though. It is pretty much like, you know, suddenly overnight saying, I'm going to take out the Telecine and put in this new thing. And by the way, the people that have the most experience with this in the world outside the guys that wrote it have had, you know, 4 days experience.
So, yeah, I mean, the only other people that have done things like this are people who have done movies with Vipers or Dalsas or Big Iron, and certainly not in the hands of a casual user.
Well, but they wouldn't have done wavelet extraction.
That these are, no, exactly right. That's very true. But I'm just saying,
Dealing
with this phenomenon on this size even would require, you know, it would not have been available to so many people. Not that it's available
to
us.
And to be honest, we actually had some people, I'm not going to go into who they were, but some people that had worked on some very big Hollywood features in the data teams that helped give us some advice and suggest some things. And, you know, it really is, there's just a handful of people that understand this stuff. And I guess we want to flag to you, because if a Red camera comes to your town and you're in a post house, it may be, you know, kind of useful to get our real world read on what it is to do this stuff, as opposed to just going, well, I guess the footage is arriving on Tuesday and we'll just convert it. And I've not done it before, so I guess we'll just see how it goes. And so what we're trying to do is just give you, as we always do, the real world view behind the kind of, you know, standard publicity stuff that that one reasonably reads. And in this respect, I don't think we've discovered anything that says that the quality of the footage is not magnificent. Just to be clear, what we're saying is that to get really great, you actually have to have had a little bit of experience, and certainly we're trying to get that experience as fast as we can. And of course, we'll try and pass it on to you guys as fast as we can as well. But it isn't plug and play, and it's certainly a professional piece of gear. I mean, the camera isn't plug and play. You know what I mean? It takes a while to rig a Red camera. The lenses aren't, you know, sort of, you know, it's like a professional piece of kit for doing serious films. And as a consequence, that flexibility inherently means that, you know, it is possible to not know what you're doing and get it wrong.
Which, you know, we certainly did on some of our shots, I noticed, as I've been reviewing the footage, and that's going to happen. People are going to have to spend some time, depending on their experience level, with this camera. Even with any experience level, I would argue, you'd have to spend some time in every aspect. And, of course, you know, that's what we're trying to do for multiple reasons. Obviously, we want to bring a lot of this to FX Guide. We want to, you know, do as much as we can there, but it's going to be deeper than we can cover in an article or a podcast. And that's why we're doing the FX PhD training on the Red camera next term.
Yeah, starting in October. But yeah, the other thing is, I think it's probably worth saying this, because it's going to be easy to grab a few JPEGs off the net in the coming days and weeks. And I'm sure a lot of armchair experts will start sort of offering up, you know, I see this artifact and I see that. And the reality is that it's become immediately aware to us that you almost need I think you suggested this, Jeff, a text file with every extraction to give you a clue as to what the settings were on the extraction, because it's really, you know, judging a camera after Telecine, in effect. It's judging the work of the DP after a colorist has graded it, you know. I mean, it's a little hard to tell what was the DP and what was the colorist. And that's just to use an analogy, of course. But, you know, you could see somebody post a really bad picture from a Red, and it's simply that they, you know, transferred it badly.
Yeah, or as somebody pointed out to me, one of our friends, mutual friends pointed out to me, metadata would be much better than a text file.
Yes.
But it would definitely be the kind of thing that, let me just say, right now, knowing what I know in 2 to 3 days, if somebody came to me and said, we've got a Red camera, we're going to shoot some footage, we want you to work on it, I'd say, fine, I want the raw files, and I'll take care of the processing, because I wouldn't want anybody else to do that for me, especially if it was a green screen or something like that. Now, the problem with that is, of course, it's a commitment on our side from the time to process all this stuff and the hardware and the iron to do that, and there's still a lot to be worked out with that. There's no way to do, you know, batch rendering on that kind of stuff right now. Today, there will be. There's no way to batch that out to a render farm, for example. There will be.
Though we should be able to render farm some stuff with compressor, shouldn't we?
Yep. That's kind of what they've been saying. So I think that'll be the first place to start looking, obviously.
I guess the other thing is, just in terms of post-workflow, I certainly have found that there hasn't been any artifacts that I've seen in terms of the things that I was looking for from the debayering and demosaicing. Because one of the things that I was worried about going in is that the highlights would have some kind of chromatic aberration. Now, for those of you that have done any sort of really detailed work with high-end digital gear, you'll know that if you get a spot highlight, it's possible to get almost like a red-green shift around that spot highlight. I'm talking like a ping off a car now. And that can be an artifact caused by the demosaic debayering stuff. And I haven't seen that. I have looked really hard for it as well. We've did some tests specifically with car grills and cars to try and find that. So the stuff that we're seeing so far is actually more to do with things like post-processing sharpening and stuff than it is to do with anything that I would call sensor-related.
Yeah. I will, let me just air a little dirty laundry. The application, the way it shipped, the first week the cameras were shipping, delivering, had a preset where the sharpening was turned on. When you quit the application or open the new file, supposedly that is being fixed and will probably be out any day now for the people that already have it, and hopefully it won't get out in the world too much like that. But that was a serious problem because we did see artifacts at first, and I would bet that there's some images that will make it out onto the net that have artifacts that shouldn't be in there. They're as simple as a setting in the Red Alert software. So I would warn everybody to be very careful what they're looking at and make sure that, you know, they're analyzing the right thing and before anything gets pointed out that's not just not true. Like I said earlier in the podcast, I want to go back and revisit the ones we did, knowing what I know now. And I'm actually kind of waiting because I want to have even more experience before I touch those images again for the purpose of publishing them again.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And so some people have said, oh, can I get the raw files from the tests that you did? And the answer is, well, not so much, because don't want to be sort of irresponsibly kind of going, yeah, just, you know, stick it in the default settings and away you go. Because it really, at the moment, it's that new, that cutting edge, that we don't even think the defaults are right. And I think we've in some great dialogue, because the guys at Red have been really, really, I mean, it was extraordinary, wasn't it, Jeff? It's Sunday in LA, it's a Labor Day weekend, and I had, I think, 4 or 5 emails from Jim himself just offering advice and help.
Well, so Labor Day weekend that was preceded by them working around the clock to meet the shipping on Friday, the long day on Friday, you guys didn't get out of there until late Friday with between the training and barbecue.
Forget the barbecue. I never got to the barbecue. I just stayed there trying to get the camera nailed. Yeah. But you're right. And yeah, it was a long, and they were just worked the whole Labor Day weekend and were just offering even to drive up to where I was staying in Santa Monica and swap out some minor parts, lens cap type stuff. So yeah, I mean, they couldn't be more responsive. In fact, that's probably one of the most impressive aspects about the whole weekend camera experience was just the insane kind of dedication from the crew. It was just extraordinary.
I would agree. I say, people ask me what I've learned from this shoot, and I said, well, I got to tell you, what I really learned is the heart of the company, and is really the thing I've learned, because I have not, you've been doing a lot more relationships with them, obviously, between the stuff at NAB and interviews, and Ted's been down there, and you actually have the camera in your hand, and, you know, I have not been involved with that as much, so I have finally just gotten a taste of it between the interactions we've had with them over this couple days shoot, and then really diving into the RedUser.net forums and kind of seeing the kind of commitment and the kind of discussions that are being had. And it's interesting seeing the heart of the company, and it really, like you've said in previous articles and stuff, reminds me of early days with some other software companies that we've loved. And it's an interesting community. It's great. It's growing. It's going to be I'm excited about this potential for this.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really, really cool. And we want to, as I say, we're trying to provide FX Guide listeners and readers with the, John and I were discussing this on an FX PhD DOD or the podcast for FX PhD. We're trying to provide the non-fanboy serious tech version of all of this, because obviously what we don't want to do is just be telling you that everything's rosy and brilliant and just painting a picture that maybe, you know, isn't that helpful for you in your day-to-day jobs. And we assume that you guys are practicing professionals. We assume that you're willing to, want to hear it warts and all. And so that's what we're trying to do. And to that end, I mean, we're trying to do really detailed technical analysis. The green screen stuff already, we shot, you know, green and blue screen with, different lenses. And, we've tried to, make sure that when we find anything, we can have a full traceable path with everything recorded to know exactly what's what, so that we can, you know, hopefully contribute to the community, because, you know, after all, we're all in this together. That sounded a bit a bit like I was reading a script, but it's sort of true.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I will say that we are going to be careful not to jump on a lot of things because we're still learning ourselves. So, you know, we're very tightly communicating with the people at Red to identify things, and, you know, most of the stuff they finish the sentences for us. They've, you know, they've obviously been deeply involved with this, and, you know, while we were shooting on Saturday, Jim was in Indianapolis shooting stuff as well with his camera, one of his cameras. So, you know, these people, Jim being the president of Red, I mean, this is you know, they're definitely hands-on with this whole process, and definitely want the feedback. And
I should point out the FX PhD training we've got in October is actually production training. So while we'll be doing post-production as well, for example, this morning I spent hours with the guys at Miller Tripods working out what would be the right recommendations from Miller on how you should approach tripod selection. And I know a lot of people are thinking, well, what should I get, you know, in terms of, obviously, we're not going to buy a Red tripod, they don't make one. So what's a good weight distribution? What sort of things should I be looking for? What sort of price points? And we spent a bunch of guys with actually the R&D engineers of Miller. I'm not talking about the sales guys now. These are the guys that get out, you know, calipers and interferometers and stuff. And we sat down with them and discussed, you know, what makes for how you should set up your tripod and what you should be looking for. And so we will be covering production stuff, but again, trying to give you a pretty level-headed view on how to move forward for obviously different types of productions. I mean, depending on what production you're on, depends on what sort of lens you have and what weight of glass is going to dictate, you know, a bunch of these things. But just to be clear that, yeah, we're going to be doing obviously the post-production stuff that we've been talking about today, and also actually on the set, like menus, lenses, optical characteristics, and, you know, of course the two are pretty related when it comes to workflow of the actual images.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm happy to be learning more about that side of things, because I feel like it's very important on my end, and, you know, I don't get out to as much shoots as I'd like to, and as at least right now, I've done my fair share in the past. But anyway, I'm excited. Are we? Do you want to talk any more about the structure of that? Is that,
you know,
is it actually?
I just wanted to flag it, because if you're somebody who's on FX Guide, is bound to know about FX PhD. But up until now, PhD's been doing training that has been just post production. And starting in October, we're doing production training. So we're doing stills photography. We're obviously doing Red training. And, you know, that would be perfect, literally, for somebody who's bought a Red camera or who's thinking they're going to hire a Red camera. Maybe they previously would not have done that because they're not a hardcore established DOP. But, you know, you're an effects house, you want to do second unit and shoot your own, you know, 100 frame a second explosion at 4K. So this is what you'd need to know to set up the camera, what you need to know in terms of how to shoot that and set the exposures and how the menus work, right through to, you know, literally how to kit up and then how to on set handle the data management of those files all the way through to what we're experiencing right now, which is obviously showing them to people and having them comment on your work.
And for the benefit of everyone too, this is not replacing FXPHD. FXPHD's current focus remains unchanged. This is an additional track, if you will.
Yeah, because we started out PhD and there was a huge amount of interest in stuff to do with on set, like, you know, what sort of tracking markers do you use on set, you know, how do you work on set, what are the issues to do with clients and stuff. And quickly we became apparent that we needed to, or there was interest in us talking about film stocks and what are good film stocks and, you know, how to work, what's the difference between an f-stop and a t-stop on a lens, so that when you go on set you can have a meaningful discussion with the camera department. And that just naturally progressed into being a really good tie-in with the Red camera, because we thought, well, here's a good camera that's obviously going to be popular in the effects community and obviously popular in the independent film community. And so with a lot of them appearing on the scene, it would be great to have some high-level, non-hyped professional training to go along with that. And, of course, the guys at Red really happy that we're doing that. I mean, they think it's terrific.
Cool.
Hey, it was really cool being with you in LA, so thank you very much for that. And though exhausting, you know, I was joking again with John on the FX PhD podcast that I had four seats in a – I couldn't get a business class seat. I had economy on the way back. I got four seats empty, you know, in the middle row. So I actually had more sleep on the plane on the way back than any one night I did while I was away in LA.
Yeah. Well, I always am blown away that you know, fly for what, 14 hours and then land in a bizarre foreign time zone and are totally messed up on body clock and then have to go sit in a full day of training that you then have to condense down to a group of, you know, 20 of our friends in an hour session on Saturday. I mean, it's a remarkable feat.
Well, actually, so, I think it was like an hour.
Cheers.
I'd been back half an hour before you dragged me down to that Imagineering meeting. And shout out to those guys. They took us out to lunch in Santa Monica. Very nice of them. But nice catching up with those guys.
Oh, actually, lots of shouts out. The Camera House.
Yeah.
Wanted to thank those guys. They, before the shoot on Saturday, we had heard that we may not have a red lens. And we weren't certain. And we were introduced through another friend of mine, a visual effects supervisor I work with a lot, who had connections at the Camera House, and we explained our plight to them, and they were not only keen to help us, but they appeared in person and brought an amazing assortment of lenses.
It was so great to test the Ingenue versus the Cook versus the red lens, and that was really valuable stuff. We'll be publishing the results of all that, of course. And I should point out that we're actually shooting with Cook lenses at the end of this month. Les from Cook, he's actually coming down to Australia for a special red and Cook lens thing we're doing, especially covering the eye technology aspect of the new data collection on the Cook lenses. And I've been looking at the four little gold data tabs on the front of my lens, waiting for the day that Red enables their own lenses to also do the same thing. But before that happens, we'll be doing the data metadata collection from the Cook lenses with them. So, yeah, there's been a lot of companies that have been really keen to work with us at a professional level to bring this stuff together. And you're right. Plus, of course, the friends and colleagues who helped host the event in Los Angeles on the Saturday, which was great.
Right, and also we should say that, and I put this in the article this afternoon, A52 and Rock, Paper, Scissors have moved to a new home in Santa Monica, and they hosted us for our shoot on Saturday, and that was outstanding. It really worked out well.
Just
and was
brilliant.
Just, yeah.
So incredibly
having
awesome.
The ability to shoot in somebody's parking lot and then have all of our people there and view the data on a plane.
You know,
and just, it was
if you'd
amazing.
Art-directed a set, I'd have happily art-directed a set. Like you say, their car park. I was expecting their car park to be like, you know, this nondescript concrete yuck thing. I thought, oh, well, that'll be fine to film in Tess. What do I care, right? But it was actually really gorgeous, their car park.
No, I know. For anybody that's in L.A. or has been in L.A., there's a building in Santa Monica known mostly as the Digiscope building. Digiscope has moved out of that building. A52 has moved in. It's the graffitied building on Broadway and Cloverfield in Santa Monica, right behind the DMV. Anyway, so it's all, they had a, years and years ago, they had it done by graffiti artists. And, so in the parking lot, if you looked on one side, there was this graffitied brick wall with beautiful frosted glass windows, old style frosty glass windows. If you turn the other direction, it was red brick wall with trees
and hedges,
you know, on another corner, there was a wheelbarrow and construction barriers up against the brick wall. It was just perfect. And there was light and shade and an Airstream trailer. People in A52 and Rock, Paper, Scissors, they know they had an Airstream in their old facility. It's in the parking lot now. So anyway, it was just an ideal location. And then, of course, the hospitality of being able to look at stuff on flames and have support and things was quite lovely.
Well, that about wraps it up for our review of the first day of filming on Red. We're glad to be able to try and bring this to you. Please send us info and feedback on the forums. We're covering a lot of things on the forums right now, from stuff to do with glue tools and DPX file conversions. There's a whole lot of really interesting threads going on, so check out the forums at fxguide.com. And, of course, this week's FX Guide TV will be filmed on the Red.
Oh, I'm excited.
Well, why not? You know, I mean, it's a complete waste of a Red, but it's our Red. We're going to use it.
Wow, yeah, absolutely. That'll be great. Angie on Red.
Down, Jeff.
Very nice. Okay. No. I don't mean that bad way. I just mean I'm happy. That's great.
No, that's true.
She can say she was one of the first talent shot on the Red.
There you go. Okay, well, from Sydney, it's Mike Seymour. Thanks for listening.
And Los Angeles, Jeff Huser. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2007 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide, LLC.